Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
Bees Blank, I'm Branham. It's Brian behind the glass. Today's a Wednesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. A jam-packed show today. DeAndre Hopkins is the Chief. Devin White is a Houston Texan. Rockets season opener is tonight. Kelly Eco will be joining us at 3:45. Are we blessing or are we stressing? Overreactions in the NFL, but I'm mad. Uh-oh. I'm mad today. So good luck, Blankers. Good luck, Brian. Good luck, Hive. I got thrown into jail today.
I tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect, and I'm a knucklehead at times.
I've been placed in Twitter jail. I am in Twitter jail for about the next 10 and a half hours. The next I'm being dead serious.
What the hell did you do?
Well, you know, I'm a criminal. I'm a thief. I'm tough.
Video
people look
use,
at me.
I'm assuming?
No, not, even, video
that's
use.
Usually, that I've was never, the thing they cracked down on with the highlights a few years ago.
No, it is not that, Brian. Look, you look at me and you know that I'm a bad hombre. You know that.
I mean,
I've been stereotyped that way before. People look at Branham, that's a bad hombre. He's probably done some hard time before. Well, I'm doing some hard time right now. I got thrown into Twitter jail for this interaction. This interaction earlier today, because I'm having a really tough time believing that Kamari Lassiter has a fractured scapula. Mm-hmm. A very difficult time thinking that Kamari Lassiter with a fractured spatula is only going to miss 2 games. That would be the fastest return from a fractured spatula in NFL history. I'm having a very tough time believing that. So I sent out a tweet, which I just quote tweeted DJ Bieniemy, actually. He said, Kamari Lassiter's back at practice. He missed the last 2 games, shoulder/spatula. And I said, this is an incredibly fast recovery from a broken spatula. Okay, no harm done. A little silly. People think that I actually think that a spatula is part of the body. They actually think that I misspelled that on purpose, which is hilarious to me. A fellow by Nomad Scott, he said, man, I broke my spatula mixing some refried beans, and it hasn't been the same since. Okay, broke a spatula, humor. A little spatula joke, no problem there. To which I responded, how did the beans turn out? And I got thrown into jail. I'm being stereotyped. I am being looked at, and I'm being, because of how I look, quite frankly, I think is what's happening here. I got thrown into Twitter jail because I asked him how the beans turned out. I didn't even enter beans into the conversation. I didn't bring up the beans. Nomad Scott said I made refried beans. Cool. That's awesome. I hope they turned out well. I asked them how they turned out. I got thrown into Twitter jail for that.
So what? Usually Twitter, like, there'll be like a specific flag that they cite for why you're being banned.
They said
like,
violating our rules against violent speech. You may not threaten, incite, glorify, or express a desire for harm or violence.
Wow.
The bad beans?
I don't know how beans turned out.
How
I had,
in the world
they deleted
is that
it.
Any of those things?
My speech is being suppressed here. By Twitter.
I'm being
discriminated and stereotyped against.
Is there an ex-appeals court?
I did place an appeal. I have not heard back.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's a 12-hour stay in jail. So, like, by the time I hear back from the appellate court,
yeah,
I feel like my time in jail is going to be up. Have you ever spent time in jail, Blankers?
No.
Look at me. I'm the tough guy of the show. I am the bad hombre
of the show.
I am the guy that is doing the hard time. I'll let you know some stories whenever I get out. I'll let you know the things that go on behind those bars. I'll tell you. Don't worry. I'll tell you.
The BS thing is they're going to, by the time they see your appeal, your stint in jail is going to be over.
I know. That's why. Yeah. That's
the weak sauce.
That's very much like right now, Brian. It is weak sauce. You're 100% right. I'm getting all these stupid tweets that I love to respond to and like make fun of how stupid they are. Like I'm triggered right now that I cannot respond to these stupid tweets that I see because being in Twitter jail for my violation, I cannot respond to comment. I can be on Twitter. Like I can see that you, Brian, just posted the show preview, Killer Bee's menu. It looks delicious. I can't retweet it because I can't tweet, can't retweet, can't like. Can't like
can't
things. I can't
vamos?
Bookmark tweets. So, like, this is problematic. So, I'm not so much triggered that I'm in jail because, look, I'm used to it. I know what it's like to be in jail. I am a bad hombre. I know what it's like. I've done it before. I've been there many times. I'm well seasoned when it comes to being behind bars. No big deal there. But what I'm really triggered about are all these stupid comments that I'm seeing that I can't respond to. That's what really gets me.
Kind of feels like you're in Twitch, huh?
No, I respond to Twitch.
No, I mean, if you were.
I know, I make fun of the Twitchers all the time.
I mean, if you're locked out.
I've never been locked out of Twitch.
Well, but I'm saying it's kind of like the same thing, though. You can't respond. You'd like to. You want to, but you can't.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah. I've never experienced being locked out of Twitch, but I guess that would be similar, yeah.
At least you get a job.
That is true. Yeah, 3 hours a day. Three-hour a day job. Yeah, but I'm in jail. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Hard time.
I am being discriminated against. I'm being stereotyped because of the way I look. I'm a little dark. I have a darker complexion than most. And I think that that's part of the reason that I'm being held in jail behind the Twitter bars. You know, I'm upset because I once upon a time thought about buying a Tesla. I don't know if I'm going to do that anymore. I don't know if I'm going to buy a Tesla anymore.
This took you out of the market?
Maybe. Maybe. I'll have to think longer and harder about it.
Discrimination against the Branham family.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, really, if you ask me. So I'm mad. Anyways, DeAndre Hopkins, but you've rubbed elbows with a criminal now, so you can tell all your friends, you know what it's like to be around some bad guys. Oh, absolutely. I have way more street cred now because I've experienced the slammer. Yeah, I do have more street cred.
I hope you're able to adjust when you get back into the free world. Like, some guys come out, you know, they have to sleep on the floor. They're not used to the soft bed. They're not used to having the free time. I don't know how you're going to adjust to this.
I have faith with discipline and be able to compartmentalize, maybe put it in the back of my mind, you know, the tragic events of these 12 hours that are currently happening. You know, the first thing I did, because you know the first thing that you're supposed to do whenever you get thrown into jail, the first thing that I did was I went to Facebook. I found the biggest, baddest son of a gun on Facebook, and I took him out.
You found somebody talking about a FIP as a legit stat, and
right.
you took him down?
I found this idiot that was saying RBI in the plural sense on Facebook, and I wiped the floor with him. I wiped the floor. I took out the biggest, baddest RBI sayer.
Me big and bad. I appreciate that.
Do you come out fighting when it's over, when the suspension's over, when you get out of
jail?
Do you come out just blazing?
No, I'm trying. I want somebody to Photoshop like my picture on a prisoner's body. Mm-hmm. So like, if anybody wants to Photoshop my head on a prisoner, 713-780-3776. I think I'm just going to announce my authority with my presence with authority. Whenever I get out of the slammer, the Twitter slammer, I'm going to put a picture of me.
I might be able
up
to
there.
Make something work.
Yeah, just
here.
A Photoshop of me out there and be like, I'm back, baby, back in the free world. Back into society, ready to make an impact. And then I'm going to go back with all these stupid comments that I've seen today. And I'm going to respond to every single stupid comment, tell them why they're a stupid comment, and then I'm going to put in parentheses, sorry, I didn't respond to this earlier. I was in jail.
Yeah, and I mean, I just can't understand the beans part of this.
I think they thought I was being racist.
There's a little bit more there that would be like suggesting.
I don't know how that's violent speech, though.
Yeah,
like if you wanted to say like cited under racism, I would still disagree, but I can understand where beans come across. I mean, I didn't have the hard ER on the end, and I didn't bring it up.
Yeah,
I didn't
if it's
bring
not
it up.
A name calling thing, yeah. If you're not using like a slang term with it, I just don't get it.
This is wrongful imprisonment. Like, there's some lawyers out there that do pro bono to try to get out wrongfully accused criminals. If anybody wants to pro bono my case, pro bono J Bones case. I'm here.
Project will take this up?
I hope so. Didn't Kim Kardashian dabble in this?
I think
Independence
she does.
For the wrongfully
yes.
convicted? I've been wrongfully convicted. Where are you, Kim Kardashian? Where are you, pro bono attorneys? Take on me as a client, and let's show the world how I've been wrong.
I can't wait for this episode of The Innocence Files on Netflix.
Yeah, right? I mean, he said he broke his spatula mixing some refried beans. There's nothing racist about that at all. But maybe there is. Maybe he was taking a racist shot at me. I don't know. I don't think that he was. And all I asked was how the beans turned out. That's all.
It's brutal.
That's all.
You've been wronged.
I think I have. Have I been wrong? Has Branham been wrong? 713-780-3776. All right. DeAndre Hopkins is a Kansas City Chief. He gets traded from Tennessee to Kansas City for a conditional fifth-round pick that can turn into a fourth, depending on some performance that we don't know about yet. What are your thoughts on this trade from a Chief perspective, from a Titan perspective, from a Texan perspective?
I think from the Chiefs' perspective, anything helps them. I think that when you start uncovering some of the numbers in terms of how he fits and the fact that they didn't have to give up much to get him, I think this is a really good match for the Chiefs. They need wide receiver help. They get it from a guy that's been there, done that, that still has good hands, that, you know, with the worthies of the world and the other guys that they have, they needed a guy like this. I think from a Titans perspective, it just tells you that they're going to start looking to be sellers across the board, that they're going to try and go for the long haul, new GM, looking for guys that fit their system better and probably unloading contracts. So Tennessee's probably going to be added to that list of teams that are probably going to be big sellers if the opportunity arises. From a Texans perspective, I think the one thing that you can say is just it hurts you in the fact that the Chiefs were already considered the best team in the AFC, if not the best, one of the two best, and now they kind of put a Band-Aid over a weakness.
Yeah, I think this is a good move by both teams. Kansas City perspective, I think DeAndre Hopkins is nowhere near the player he once was. Like, let's be very clear who DeAndre Hopkins is currently as a football player, although it's a little bit difficult to gauge when you have Will Levis and Mason Rudolph throwing him the ball, and you have some mouths to feed. Calvin Ridley's been complaining. So I don't really know what DeAndre Hopkins is in 2024, but I can say pretty confidently that he is nowhere near the player he used to be. I do think he is on the back nine of his career. I don't think he has too much left in the tank. Is he immediately Kansas City's best receiver? Yeah, probably. Like, Worthy gives you the speed threat. DeAndre Hopkins gives you the ability to catch the football in traffic, the ability to be your possession guy. So it makes a lot of sense from Kansas City that you get DeAndre Hopkins in there, who immediately becomes your best possession receiver and easily one of your top two receivers that you have, especially with Juju Smith-Schuster that's injured. And I feel guilty for saying that Juju Smith-Schuster is even in the same conversation as DeAndre Hopkins. So this makes Kansas City better. This makes their wide receiver room better. I don't think there's any doubt about that. For Tennessee's perspective, like, you're going nowhere. You're going nowhere fast. What is the point of having DeAndre Hopkins in the final year of his deal? You get a draft pick that can be as good as a fourth rounder for a guy who's going to leave you in free agency at the end of the year. And again, you're not anywhere near a playoff caliber team. So it makes a lot of sense from both perspectives. From a Houston Texans perspective, I don't like it. I don't like it. We were talking yesterday about the upper echelon of teams in the NFL, and the Texans are not in that upper echelon. They're behind Baltimore. They're behind Kansas City, no doubt. Maybe they're in the same tier as some of the other teams in the AFC. But behind Kansas City, behind Baltimore, if you have teams that are above you, you don't want those teams to get better. The Kansas City Chiefs got better. So the Houston Texans, whatever the gap was yesterday between Houston and Kansas City, the gap grew a little bit more because they acquired DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that's the biggest thing that you have to look at is we've talked about the fact that, you know, if a guy gets hurt, if one of their key players goes down, Baltimore and Kansas City are pretty much the cream of the crop in the AFC, so it looks as we sit here today. If one or both of those teams experience those kind of injuries, that's where the playing field gets a little bit more level. That's where you get a chance to move up. That's where there's a chance for you to maybe catch one of those teams. This doesn't help because of the fact that we all knew the biggest glaring weakness that the Chiefs have right now is wide receiver. And they got better. And because they got better, that means the offense got better. We know their defense is good. And that means that they've put a Band-Aid over a wound that might have been able to be something you could capitalize on.
I couldn't ask this farming engagement question on Twitter because I'm in the slammer. I'm in jail. Should the Texans have made this move?
No.
Should the Texans have traded a fifth conditional fourth for DeAndre Hopkins?
I don't think so. I don't think that they need DeAndre Hopkins. I think that, you know, Nico's not season ending. Yes, it's 4 weeks. They said that he's on the telecast that he's progressing to be ahead of schedule. I think you're going to get Nico Collins back. You got plenty of wide receivers that you can rely on. I don't think the Texans need. And let's face facts: Tennessee ain't trading to do anything to help the Texans either. But yeah, I don't think this is a move that they should make.
That's a great point on the second front. Like, if Amy Adams Stunk had a chance to take a fifth rounder from somebody else or a fourth rounder from the Texans, she probably takes the fifth rounder from somebody else out of spite. So it's a good point on that sense. I'm with you too. I wouldn't have traded a fifth conditional fourth for DeAndre Hopkins. I like the wide receiver room. People are, they should be doing more. I would point to the offensive line as the reason they're not doing more. You have Nico Collins, who's going to come back. Aaron Wilson, although I'm a little nervous about what Aaron Wilson's reporting lately. He's saying that Kamari Lack Lassiter has a broken spatula. He's going to be back in 2 weeks. I don't know about that. He said that Nico Collins progressing well. They don't expect him to miss extended time. So I'm comfortable with the wide receivers are. I wouldn't have offered this for DeAndre either. Although I do think that the Texans are further away from the top teams in the AFC today versus even yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree with that.
713-780-ESPN. Now, the Texans were not quiet today. Will and Dylan, son of a gun, Nick Caserio's up to his old tricks. He signed Devin White. Do you like the signing of Devin White? And what does this tell us about maybe the performance of some backup linebackers? And what does this tell us maybe about the health of some other linebackers? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I know what it's like to be a band twitcher now. Also on YouTube at ESPN Houston, Blankers at Pac-Man, Joel, Brian at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. I can read everything you can see, but I can't respond to your ignorance. It is the Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
Hey guys, before we go to the break, a word from our good friends at Allstate Siding and Windows. My neighbors just got their windows redone at Allstate Siding and Windows because they saw mine. Yeah, I got my windows done about a little over 6-7 months ago when we got into a different house, and my wife and I knew that we wanted to do something to kind of upgrade the overall appearance of the house that also could be more effective in terms of our energy bills and do a lot of things to protect us in the new house. And we picked the right company and the right product by doing windows with Allstate Siding and Windows. It first and foremost, it upgrades the overall appearance of the house right at first glance when you pull up curbside. But more importantly for us, it basically reduced our energy bills by about 30-some percent. And on top of that, they're unbelievably protective. We know we're in hurricane season. We know what those high winds bring. And we know the fact that a lot of times with the winds come the moisture that can get through the windows, get into the house, and cause damage. The fact is the windows are phenomenal. They are hurricane resistant. They do what they're supposed to do, and they're going to help you in so many ways. And the great people at Allstate Siding and Windows are the people that I tell you you should go to, because the process is painless, it's very easy, and it starts with a free estimate. All you got to do is call them, and they'll tell you all about their siding, their windows, their products, and how they can possibly help. Nothing that you have to commit to, but nothing you have to pay for to get them to come out and check and see what your house looks like and what you're looking at possibly doing. They're going to tell you about all their deals right now, 30% off all windows, $2,500 off a complete siding job. You mentioned us in ESPN 97.5. They're always looking to take care of our listeners. With those free estimates available, it's as simple as this. Call them, 832-204-1936. Just have them come out, and just tell you exactly how they can help and the products that they suggest. 832-204-1936. Check out all their products at AllstateSidingAndWindows.com.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You know, the time in the clink's not as bad as I thought. It's not as bad as... I don't know why people always gripe about going to the clink. It's not nearly that bad. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Texans signed Devin White. Do you like the move of the Texans signing Devin White? 713-780-3776. What do you think, Blankers?
I love it. I love it, and it's kind of a pattern that you and I've talked about through all the Houston sports teams. When you're in a situation where you have a better than average team like the Texans do, and you're at this point in the season, we've talked about just how limited you are in terms of when you have some kind of an injury or some kind of a weakness, trying to improve at this time of the season is very, very difficult. And the fact that you were able to kick the tires on a very low risk, high reward situation on a guy that's only 26 years old, that was released by the Eagles because of the fact that he wasn't playing and they were trying to do him a solid so he could pick the team he wanted to go to. And he went to the Texans in a position where they need linebacker help and depth, if nothing else. I think it's the risk worth taking. I've heard some things subsequently that said that maybe he's not the greatest locker room guy. Well, we talked about this on a larger scale when Diggs was brought in here. You're in a situation where you bring him in basically for nothing, and if you decide he's not going to work out or he acts up, then he can be sent packing. But in the meantime, he gives you everything that you need right now, which is linebacker depth from an experienced guy that maybe still has plenty left in the tank at 26. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm curious about the usage of him. Everybody likes the move. I haven't seen anybody say that they don't like the move. I think that the questions that you ask yourself are, did the Texans like what they saw from Hewitt and Hanson as starting linebackers this past week? I think the reason that they brought in Devin White is because they didn't necessarily like what they saw, at least from one of those players. And then the second question to that would be, what is the status of the injuries on Azeez Alshire and Christian Harris, and even to a lesser degree, Henry To'oTo'o? Henry To'oTo'o practiced today, whereas Azeez Alshire did not with the knee, which is kind of a curious injury because he came back and played in the game 2 weeks ago. And then Christian Harris, which is an incredibly curious injury. They've called it a calf strain. He's been out for 2.5 months since he walked to the practice field and re-aggravated what was a calf strain. As far as Devin White, the player, what I remember from Devin White was that Super Bowl run that he had in Tampa Bay where he was fantastic. He was amazing. He was really, really good. Pro Football Focus hates Devin White. They think he's really bad at football, especially against the run. He's got some favorable pass coverage grades. He's got some favorable pass rushing grades, but against the run, he's not very good, which makes me wonder if they see him kind of as a platoon linebacker, which is kind of rare to do at the linebacker spot. But maybe if the Texans are in a situation where you have Neville Hewitt playing your second linebacker spot, maybe he plays early down run situations, and then you sub him off the field for Devin White in passing situations. So kind of try to figure it out in the aggregate while Azeez Alshire and or Christian Harris are out. As far as the locker room stuff, I did read some of that. Brooks Kabina was on with Landry and Stutes earlier on their little simulcast thing that they do. And Kabina, who's covered him with the Eagles this year and back to his days at LSU, says that the locker room stuff is overrated. He's not a bad locker room guy.
Good.
So that's kind of good news there. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like everything you said, low risk, high reward, cool. I kind of see him more as a depth linebacker. What I was seeing on Twitter before and I can still see stuff on Twitter, I just can't respond because I'm in the slammer. But what they were talking about, like a lot of the fans were, oh no, this means Christian Harris is done for the year. And I can't tell you definitively that this move does not mean that because I have no clue. It's a mysterious injury. Maybe it does say that. But I would also say that Nick Caserio is never one to shy away from adding depth to the team. It could very easily be like, okay, we didn't love what we saw with Jake Hansen. If we get into a spot later in the year where we have more injuries, we don't think that Jake Hansen should be on the field every single play. So let's see what Devin White has, and let's see if Devin White's better than Hansen, because now we're getting a little bit better deep into our linebacker crew, which is, I think, how general managers should operate. Remember last year the Texans claimed Tyre Tart late in the year? Yep. Mm-hmm. And people were like, whoa, what is this? Does this mean he's starting? Does this mean people were hurt? No, it just means that he was better than the worst defensive tackle on the team. So I think that's what you're seeing here. I can't tell you definitively it's because they feel safe that Christian Harris is coming back. Because I don't know anything about that. I'm not a reporter. I don't have inside information. It's a very mysterious injury. I have no clue. Christian Harris could be done for the year. Christian Harris could come back in 2 weeks. No clue. I don't think the signing today is an indicator on Christian Harris. I think they're two very different things. I think they view Devin White as a marginal upgrade over their worst linebacker in that room on the 53.
Yeah, I think you've heard Caserio talk, whether it be when he's doing Texans radio or, you know, even at press conferences, about not just the starters. He's constantly looking for ways he can upgrade the team. And if you don't think Hansen was adequate enough in the way he played when he got a chance this last weekend, and you feel like you can add an NFL veteran that's still very, very young, that's coming off some injuries, but is better than Hansen no matter what, and has the chance to be a guy that was once very highly regarded in this league as a linebacker, then you take that chance and you add that player and then you see it play out. And if after a few weeks or you know, however many snaps, it looks like White doesn't have it or he's not better than Hansen and he's not worth having around, you can move on. But because the guy has a resume that he brings when he walks into the locker room where he used to be damn good, and there's a chance he's at least better than what you already have on your roster at a time when you need linebackers, then I'm all for making this move. Because like you said, we don't know what we don't know, but we do know that Christian Harris's injury has lingered longer than it was supposed to. But if this also provides you an extra added layer of depth, should there be a longstanding problem with Christian Harris, again, a very savvy move that doesn't cost you much that might be exactly what you need.
9392 says that the previous show does not like the move. You gotta start giving us some context. Like, why don't they like the move? And I don't want to put words in their mouth either. But if anyone doesn't like the move, why not? Like, what is this costing you? Who was the guy that they cut to make room for Devin White? Anybody? Anybody? Crickets? Crickets? No. Who's the guy that you cut for Devin White? If Devin White's playing ahead of Jake Hansen, are you going to lose your mind over that? So what is the cost here? Like, what is the cost of adding Devin White that you didn't like? And maybe they bring in Devin White, and they're like, okay, this guy's washed. Maybe Devin White gets into a fight with Stephon Diggs and you cut him. Again, at what cost? For a guy that you cut off the 53 that you can't name and then for nothing else. So because it's such low cost, I don't know how you could dislike this move.
No, and I think
unless you think it's because Christian Harris is done for the year.
Yeah, and look, I think that everything's on the table for people to contemplate, but we don't know what we don't know. So at the same time, all you can really say is they're bringing an NFL veteran that's 26 years old that was looking for a team, got to pick where he wanted to go. You didn't have to give up anything to get him. And at the same time, if he does have any kind of talent left, he could be something that you sorely need at a time when you're desperate because of what you have available to play. Now, I think that we should expect, and I think they might have already practiced today, but when you get Toto back and Al-Shaair, that eases the necessity to get some more guys. But what you saw was Hewitt's a guy that used to start in this league. He's active. He's really, really physical. He can do some things athletically. So you know you've got one guy that's capable, but in the other guy in Hansen, you're not sure he might be, so you got somebody else.
How would you deploy him, Devin White?
I think first of all, you got to see what kind of shape he's in, and if he's healthy. I mean, if he's healthy coming off the two leg injuries that he was coming off of, and he's in good enough shape.
Well, he didn't have an injury this year with Philly, and he was playing. He just wasn't starting.
I thought they said that he was still lingering, either foot or maybe a hamstring.
I don't think so.
I had read one article where I thought that they said that he was still nursing some kind of a lower leg injury or a leg injury. But regardless, if he's in good shape and he's 100% healthy, then I'm going to start giving him reps at practice, you know, alongside some of the guys that we've talked about, assuming Toto and Al-Shaair practice. And then seeing in terms of when you start, you know, scrimmaging and going up against your ones, just seeing where he is in terms of his ability to move laterally and fill the hole to say, okay, I'm going to throw him out there for some series and I'm going to see if he's able to be effective. If he's effective, then I'm going to continue to use him.
He was out with an ankle injury in week one, but he's been a healthy and active ever since. So I didn't even realize the ankle in week one, but maybe that was an ankle.
Maybe.
Because he's been a healthy scratch in every game since. Now, the way that I'm deploying him is he's probably my linebacker 4, and not right away, but at some point, probably the week after this, he's ahead of Jake Hansen for me. I didn't like what I saw on film for Jake Hansen. D'Amico was going to say all the right things. Oh, we liked what we saw, blah, 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 blah. He's not ahead of Nevelle Hewitt for me. Obviously, he would not be ahead of Harris if Harris comes back. He wouldn't be ahead of Toto. He wouldn't be ahead of Azeez Al-Shaair. I would have him ahead of Hansen, and I might even go as far to say that I would have some sort of platoon there. If Devin White's good at pass rushing and he's good at pass coverage, but he's not good at the run game, and then like a Jake Hansen's better in the run game, but he's atrocious in pass coverage, then maybe you're looking at a situation where Jake Hansen's playing first and second down and then Devin Hewitt's playing third down, assuming you have injuries to other guys. But is it worth the risk? Yeah. This is nothing. Like, you got him for free almost.
Right. I mean, you look at it and say, look, he's a bigger, solid, physical guy. If he can cover in the pass game, great. If he can cover in the run game, fantastic. If he's limited and there's only situational times you can use him, okay, so be it. But if he can help you and shows that he's got plenty left in the tank and he looks like he just wants to, you know, make the most of this chance, you start him out slowly, but the more he progresses and shows he can play, use him as much as you need to.
The texters who are snitching on the Killer G's, they've given us the and I know all about snitches because, you know, I'm a bad hombre. But they said that the Killer G's are saying that he's washed over and over throughout the show. Blaine saying Noon Show just thinks he's washed, just a non-needle mover to them. Wash is hard to call for a guy who's 26, but I do think he's not as good as, like, we remember. I don't think he's as good as his name. I think a lot of it is cachet, but do I think he's better than Jake Hansen? Yes. And if Jake Hansen is on the football team, then why wouldn't you bring in Devin White? Like, a lot of times you bring in players, you know, he's not going to be a starter. Okay, so what? Like, you can make your team better if he's better than your 53rd guy. If Devin White's better than the previous number 53 guy on your team, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, look, this is what a general manager is supposed to do. This is what we've talked about all the way back to Dana Brown, or, you know, as it relates to any of the big three teams in Houston, is the fact that you're constantly looking to upgrade your roster, whether it's because you have injuries and there's a desperate need, or the fact that you just need better depth because in case something does happen, you're at a certain level to where you can't afford to falter and fall back to a certain level of guys that are incompetent of playing the way you expect to play when you do get in big games and as the season progresses. It's a smart move by a smart general manager trying to, if nothing else, trying to improve and upgrade the level of depth you have at a specific position.
I do not see him passing Harris if he's healthy, which is a huge if, but Toa Toa or Azeez Alshire. I think best case he gets up to linebacker number three.
I think Toa Toa is the one guy that it might come to that point at a certain point if he is capable of getting back where he was. But I don't think he touches a healthy Harris and Alshire.
Yeah, I don't think he's close to Toa Toa, Devin White.
We'll see. I mean, like I said, I always was a fan of his when he came into the league in terms of all the things that he was able to do and physical punishing on hits, but could run and also cover. That if you get, you know, it's a long shot, right? It's a snowball's chance in hell it happens. But if it does happen that he's still got a lot of that left and he shows it, then I think he could fight for some time with Toto.
713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Rockets season opener tonight. Tonight, game one of 82. So let's do our game. Let's predict, one, how many games the Rockets win, and then who leads the Rockets in some statistical categories. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
How does it feel for you guys to be sitting in the same room or adjacent room with a criminal who has done some heinous things, some bad things?
I'm just glad there's this really thick, I don't know if bulletproof glass, but it's really thick glass between us right now.
Better be bulletproof.
Yeah, I know.
This arm.
A little nervous around you now.
I was just wondering if we could get the charges upgraded. I'm not sure if there's, like, you know, life sentencing or, you know, longer terms.
I hope not. That'd be bad. All right. How many games do Rockets win this year?
I think they win 43. Okay. I think they go 43-39.
Okay. That's the over, right? Because they're in Vegas at 42.5 team wins.
Yeah, I thought 42-40, right, but I'm going to go 43. I'll go slightly over. I'll go 43-39. I think they're going to be extremely entertaining to watch. I just think the West is tougher than maybe than it's been in the last year or two, and I think that that's about where I got them finishing.
Yeah, you can get over 42.5 some places, up to 44.5 some places. I played the over today at BetUS, 42.5. So I'm on the over as well. Good enough to get into the playoffs?
Play-in.
Okay. I don't know how they're going to do it because the West is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. I think the Rockets get into the playoffs, whether that's playing their way in through the play-in, whether it's finishing as a top six team. I expect them to have a pretty substantial improvement in wins. I don't think it's going to be as big as, you know, the last year of Silas, first year of Ime, because there was a lot of room to grow. But I think that they win like six more games than they did last year. And last year they went 41-41. So I think they're going to be in the upper 80s with wins.
Yeah, I think that the big thing is people have 50. The expectation of a team that jumped in, 19 games that first year. You just don't make jumps that substantial. I think that winning a couple more games now because they're more starting to get in line with the better teams in the league, it's not as easy to gain that much ground. So I think it's probably fair for you to say a handful of games. Sure, I'm a little less than that, but it doesn't take away from the fact that I think that the brand of basketball and the quality and talent on the floor is greatly improved from anything that we had with Silas.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge homer. I never criticize the local team. So I think that they win in the upper 80s, and I think they find a way to get into the playoffs, whether it's a six-seed or playing their way through the play-in. Brian, how many wins did you have the Rockets? No, I said upper 40s.
You said upper 80s.
Did I?
Yeah.
I'm in upper 40s.
Yeah. I've got them at 44-38.
44-38?
Yeah, and make it into the playoffs.
Okay. Yeah, the Rockets go 82-0. They run through the playoffs, and they win in the upper 80s in basketball games this year. All right. I don't know who won our little Astro stat game. I think it was me. I don't know who won it, actually.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever had that up.
Actually, I have no idea if I won it. I was just saying that to brag. But we're going to do it with the Rockets. Points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game, steals per game, blocks per game, three-point percentage. We already drew numbers, so we don't have to sit through the boring who drew 1, 2, and 3. Blanker's got 1, I got 2, Brian got 3, and then we rotate the stat, and then we rotate who picks first. We have to pick a unique player in each different one. That way we have a clear-cut winner. I guess if there's a tie, that would make things difficult. Also, you have to hit the NBA game minimum requirement to qualify for this. All right, Blanker's got the first pick. The first stat is points per game, you lucky guy. Who leads the Rockets in points per game this year? That's pretty obvious, right?
Yeah, no,
although he did pick Jake Myers in stolen bases.
Jake Myers in stolen bases is a wild card here.
Maybe we shouldn't give away any hints. Keep your knowledge to yourself.
To me, it's not. I don't think it's as clear cut, but I will say Jalen Green.
That was the answer.
Yeah.
Was it?
See, that's what I was saying. Well, it was a two-horse race.
It's a two-person answer, yes. And I thought Jalen was the higher of the two.
I mean,
I just think he goes for 30-point games a lot more frequently than Alpi does when Alpi goes double-doubles. So it was between those two guys, and I lean Jalen.
Okay. I'm going to go with the guy who led the Rockets in scoring last year. Alpi Shingun. Mm-hmm. So I got Alpi. Brian, who's your you can't pick either two, so.
Yeah, no, this is
you're in trouble.
This is not a great position to be in. I guess I'll just take someone who I know is going to be on the court a lot, and I'll go with Fred VanVleet. I don't like it, but
those were the top three scorers
last
year.
Yeah, that's a smart call.
All right, next one is rebounds per game, and I have the first pick here. Jeez. What? That's tight.
No, now you want to talk about a no-brainer.
You kidding me? Last year, points per game, Alpi Shingun led by a point and a half. Rebounds per game last year was separated by a tenth of a point.
Still think it's going to be different this year.
Well, who do you think is going to lead?
I'm not going to tell you that.
Actually, I was looking at defensive rebounds. I wasn't looking at total rebounds, which is a separation of over a rebound per game.
Bigger.
I'm going to go with Alpi again.
Yeah,
Alpi Shingun, leading rebounder on the Houston Rockets. So I'm team Alpi this year, which is kind of different for me. But Alpi leading rebounder. You're next, Brian.
Yeah, this is, again, another two-person question to me. So I will take the second of the two and go Jabari Smith.
Smart. Yeah. Yep.
Blankers.
So that doesn't leave me with a whole hell of a lot.
Those other guys that are tall and can chew bubble gum at the same time.
Yeah, not going to get the kind of rebounds that are going to compete with the two guys you got. I will say, I just don't think Big Steve's going to be on the court enough. I will say Dylan Brooks.
Okay, good pick. That's a good third pick. I mean, you don't have a chance to win this category.
No.
But good pick. Yeah. Assists per game, Brian?
This is an easy one. Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, this one's...
I didn't have to think much on this one.
Yeah, this might be the best
off.
One to have.
Yeah.
Like, this might be the biggest discrepancy. I'll go.
Is it me?
Oh,
it's
me next.
Yeah.
That's good. I don't want to have him be second here. I really don't.
I'm going to go Amen Thompson.
Okay.
Number two.
Yeah, more of a power forward than a point guard these days. I'll go with Alpi Shingun. I'm going to pick Shingun on every single stat. But, you know, they'll feed him in the post. He's a willing passer. He's going to get a ton of assists from the low block. I don't think he's going to win this, but I think he's got a better chance than anybody else. All right, steals per game. Blankers, you're first.
Steals per game.
This one's tough.
It is. I am going to... Man, I'm going to say... I'm going to go Amen Thompson again.
Okay. He was on my short list. There's three people that I had on my short list here. You're going to Min. I'll go Fred VanVleet.
That was going to be where I went, yeah. This is tough. You know what? Screw it. I'll go with the defensive guy. He's brought here to play defense. I'll go with Dylan Brooks.
Wow. Atari was
yeah, Atari's I know. I don't think Dylan Brooks would be the odds on here to finish third, but I'm going to take a little bit of a swing here and go with Dylan.
All right. Blocks per game. I'm up first here. This one's tough because Alpi doesn't really block shots. You know, Fred VanVleet almost led the Rockets in blocks last year.
What?
Per game, yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to say who led and all that stuff right now. I'll go Jabari, though, because Jabari needs to take a step up in that department. So I'll say Jabari Smith leads the Rockets in blocks per game this year. Brian?
I'll go with who did lead the team in blocks per game and go with Tari Eason. Now, obviously, getting the amount of games played could be a concern here, but I'll go ahead and take was the arguably the best shot blocker in the team.
You going to go VanVleet, who was tied for second last year?
No. I'm going to go with Alpi.
Okay, Alpi Shingun. Not known for his rim protection, but
no. He gets up, though, boy. He flies.
3-point percentage, Brian.
Reed Shepard.
It's pretty much a no-brainer.
Reed Shepard.
Now, obviously, again, the concern is playing time.
Yeah, he's got to hit the minimum.
He's got to hit the minimum. So that will be the... I think if we didn't have the minimum, Reed Shepard is the easy number one answer, and I still think he probably is the number one answer. But, yeah, it definitely complicates things with the unknown of playing time.
Yeah, best three-point shooter on the team. I feel without confident question. Saying that already. Blankers?
Fred VanVleet.
That was going to be my pick. I'll go a growing year, developing year, improves a lot in this area year.
You going Jalen?
No, I'm going Jabari.
Okay.
Are you kidding me? Jalen Green.
I knew you weren't going
Tate. I thought you were going bold take there.
No, he's not getting enough threes, although he is a chucker. I'll go Jabari. Give me Jabari Smith to lead the Rockets in 3-point percentage. What are our stakes here, by the way?
Same as they always are, pretty much nothing.
Is this a drink one? No, we pay our bets here. That's the Killer G's that do not. Brian,
yeah, I'm fine with the drink bet.
I owe you lunch, but that's coming. You also eat way healthier than me, so it makes things complicated.
Who, me?
You, yeah. Oh. Yeah, I like fried food and, you know, well, things that are high in calories.
Go to your Panda Express and I can get something there.
What's your Panda Express order?
Probably chicken and broccoli.
Broccoli and
that's
chicken?
Pretty
what
healthy.
What side do you want?
Lo mein.
Lo mein? Okay, that's not healthy. Don't eat lunch tomorrow. I'll stop because, okay. I mean, you're threatening me with Panda Express for lunch.
That's what I'm saying,
me with
yeah.
a good time.
You use your
music
Panda
this Christmas is
for?
Coming early. I have to get out of jail first. All right, Kelly Eco covers the Rockets for The Athletic, ahead of the Rockets opening the season tonight. Are we going to drink, just a drink on this one?
Sure.
Drink bet? We never.
Whatever.
Yeah, let's go drink bet on this one, I think. All right, Kelly Eco to break down all things Rockets with season opener tonight. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line, being joined by Kelly Eco, regional NBA reporter for The Athletic, based here in Houston. Kelly, just want to let you know you are talking to a criminal. I was thrown in jail today. Just wanted to let you know who you're talking to as we conversate over. Don't laugh at that. It's not funny. It's very, very serious. Kelly, the Jalen Green, Alpi Shingun contract extensions. Why?
Right.
Why the years? What do you think was behind the Rockets' thinking and the players' thinking here?
So starting with LP, I think, you know, the more the Rockets looked at the landscape and saw players like Donovan Mitchell, you know, Lauri Markkanen, those guys kind of signing extensions elsewhere, it didn't really behoove them to be, you know, a cap player, you know, next summer. So, you know, with Alperin, they decided to lock him up for 4-5 years, you know, with the option on the fifth year. He's somebody that, if you compare him to his current draft class, you can make the argument he's the best player in that draft class right now. He was a fringe all-star. He finished third in the most improved player. So getting him at that number, I guess around $33 million a year, you know, is pretty good business for them. If that's going to be your franchise cornerstone, right? With Jalen, it's a bit different because of the years and because of the risk on both sides, right? So you have with Jalen, you know, he can opt out after 2 years and either hit the market, sign another extension. So there's a reality that, you know, he could walk and Houston could get absolutely zilch in return in 2 years. And there's also the possibility that he doesn't play to his standards and except for himself, and then they're stuck with the contract. Like, it's risk on both sides, right? So, you know, in all these negotiations, the key is for flexibility, and the Rockets, their optimal goal was to be a flexible team. They want to keep that young core together. If you can push out decisions about having to pay guys for another 2-3 years, you know, they'll do that, because if you think about it, they still got to pay Jabari and Tari next year or the year after that, and then you have a man. Like, there are a number of decisions that they have to make in the next few years, and they still want to see what this whole team looks like with a few years under Ime. So I think the key was flexibility, but even with flexibility, there's still going to be a good amount of risk on both sides.
I was going to say, you mentioned there's risk on both sides, and I think that the one thing Jeremy and I talked about when we saw the announcements made that I was concerned with is you still had some time that you could have bided your time a little bit more before you made any decisions, because we really truly don't know what Jalen can be. We think we know what Alpi can be, and then there's that whole thing about what can they do together, because it seemed like they were both more successful when the other one wasn't on the court. So that's where I had my concerns. What do you say about that?
I think that's fair. I just think that if you're looking at the landscape and trying to forecast a year from now, like, you never know. Like, there could be, like, worst case scenario, if something goes wrong with either one of them and there's a player on the market that's making around $40-50 million. Now it's easier to get a deal done, you know, because they're making close to that range of money, as opposed to if they're making just $16 million and like 12 million. And, you know, it's an easier thing to figure out a trade if it ever came down to that point. But even aside from that, you know, if you can lock them up before the season starts, you don't have to deal with the whole potential of the locker room going in a certain way, and it just gives everyone peace of mind. Now, granted, I think the Rockets, as an organization, they had all the leverage on their side in terms of, like, the restricted free agency, because we've seen how tricky it can get at times with certain players. So I think, ultimately, you hit the base on a number of factors. It gives the players, you know, long-term money, it gives them security, it gives them a chance to bet on themselves, and it also gives you, as a team, flexibility in case you want to make a trade or you want to renegotiate in 2 years' time.
Kelly Eco, regional NBA reporter for The Athletic, based here in Houston, of course. Kelly, Rockets 41-41 last year. Year two coming up of Ime Udoka. You return just about everybody who is a rotational player. You add Reed Shepard, Tari Eason's healthy. Steven Adams, probably an upgrade at that backup center spot, especially early in the year. He'll get the minutes there. What are the realistic expectations for the Rockets? They'll never tell you. They'll be like one game at a time. But what do you think the expectations of the Rockets should be?
If we're talking about expectations, at least from a Western Conference standpoint, I think the expectation should definitely be getting to the play-in. It's going to be hard to break in my opinion, the top six in the West, because you have to think about the Thunder, the Timberwolves, you know, the Suns, the Nuggets, Dallas, Sacramento. Like, there are a bunch of teams that theoretically should finish above Houston, but if there's going to be year-over-year improvement and you finish with, say, 45, 46 wins, now you're talking about getting in, you know, through the play-in. So I think that should definitely be on the cards, especially a season after you won 19 more games than the year prior, right? So you still want to – it's always hard to take that next step after you have such a substantial leap. But, you know, if they can clean things up, especially – on the offensive side of the ball, I think that if you're accounting for typical youth and development going into the next season, I think that should be enough to get you at least 4 or 5 more games than the year prior.
So, Kel, when we talk about the fact that there is so much young talent on this team and everybody's looking for the minutes to be able to show their wares, to be able to prove that they've taken a step up, who do you think takes the logical next step this year of the young core? And who's going to be kind of odd man out for minutes? We talk about Tari coming back. We already know how loaded the rotation is with talent and everybody fighting for minutes. Who's the odd man kind of out, and who's going to take the big leap up?
In terms of biggest leap, I'm gonna circle Amen Thompson. I just think, yes, the jump shot is gonna be, you know, the biggest storyline of his career probably, but just in terms of how he impacts the game in so many different areas, you saw what he did whenever Alperen went down and he was the team's de facto center, being able to attack guys from the free throw line down. You know, he's an excellent cutter. He understands spacing and he knows how to get other guys involved. I think he is going to be the X factor in terms of bringing that juice into the second unit, being able to energize, you know, along with the Cam and along with, you know, with Tari in that second unit. As far as players that might be like of the rotation,
mm-hmm.
It's a good question because I think the tricky thing about Tari and Steven is that because they're coming back from injury, you want to manage their minutes properly. And Ime is a coach that once he has a rhythm, he's going to stick to that rhythm, right? So if you want to count for the starters, you know, Jalen, Jabari, Alpi, Fred, and Dylan, and then you talk about Reed, Amen, that's 6'7". Okay. Now you're talking about Tari, Cam, Steven, and then probably Jason, right? So it's a lot of guys competing for about 9 spots. So I think either Tari or Cam is going to come down to, you know, how they're playing on that night, really, because whoever's giving more on both ends to who Emile's going to go with. He always talks like he doesn't care about age or, like, he's going to play who's giving them the best chance to win. See, so I think those are the guys that have to have something to prove.
My answer there would have been Jayshon Tate, simply because of the fact that for the way they thought of him before and the role that he played and then the money they committed, that he kind of doesn't fit because of there is so many young guys to get minutes.
So, in my I was only referring to like the top 7-8 guys.
Yeah,
I would put Jayshon in that similar class to Jeff Green, where they those are kind of the, you know, the tweeners in terms of they might not get in the game. It's just too many guys that are vying for minutes.
So last question, Cal, from me, but the question then becomes, because we talk so much about this is the core that we're committing to for the next several years, this is the guys that are going to be fighting for minutes. At a certain point, unlike years past when we needed the veteran leadership, when they went out and committed dollars and a lot of dollars to a lot of older guys, do we see this is the year that at a certain point between now and the trade deadline, Fred, Dylan, Jeff Green, the kind of veterans that were needed a year ago are the guys that might be shopped around when you're talking about like looking for dollars that make sense in trades because you have so much young talent?
So a guy like Dylan, I think just because of how important he is to what Ime wants to do defensively, I think he made it pretty clear that Ime, that Fred, Dylan, and Steven are more of teachers as well as guys in the locker room. So if it's an Ime thing, I don't think that he would want those guys to leave. Now, if you're the front office and you're looking at the landscape, of course you're going to take calls, you know, because those are guys that can help, you know, playoff teams. But if you're trying to make the playoffs yourself, I think you want to see what that group looks like for at least another year under Ime before you then move out to make any decisions, because right now you really don't have to do anything right now because of the flexibility you have. Now, come next summer when Fred's deal is up or the option can kick in, now you can have those conversations, because then you would have had another year of experience under Ime and seeing what works, what doesn't, what needs to be built on, what needs to be probably shipped on. So then you can have those talks at that juncture. But I think at least going into the season, you know, you want to keep those guys together.
Kelly, appreciate the time. Very good insight. I'm sure we'll catch up with you later as the Rockets season begins tonight.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Kelly Eco. You can follow him on Kelly. Kelly, he doesn't want to associate with a prisoner.
No,
I don't blame him.
No.
I don't blame him. At Kelly Eco on Twitter, regional NBA reporter for The Athletic. 713-780-ESP. What are the pressing questions of the Rockets that you have? Also, CJ Stroud, is he getting too much love? Is he on the other side of this? And a quarterback that's getting a lot of disrespect, tons of disrespect. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Coming up, homecoming this weekend, Saturday at TD ECU Stadium. You're going to want to take part of this. We all love homecoming. Homecoming is fantastic. It is the very best. You get to watch your team. You get to enjoy your old friends. It's fantastic. So get out there Saturday, TD ECU Stadium, as the Houston Cougars take on the Utah Utes for homecoming. 6 o'clock start. Weather's going to be beautiful at TD ECU Stadium this Saturday night. And how about this deal? The homecoming special. You can get 4 tickets and a parking pass for only $70. Where else are you getting that kind of deal? Where else are you getting family entertainment for 4 for just $70? You can't find it anywhere else. So get ready for a night of thrilling plays, hard-hitting action, unforgettable moments, and the pomp and circumstance of homecoming. Nothing beats the tradition, pageantry, and the roar of the crowd, especially for a homecoming game. So head to uhcougars.com/home. That's uhcougars.com/home and pick up that homecoming offer. Come early. Stop by the Bud Light backyard tailgate area. Enjoy food, a beverage, all the tailgate games, everything that's involved with Saturday college football and homecoming. That homecoming offer, 4 tickets, parking pass for just $70. Head to uhcougars.com/home, uhcougars.com/home, and pick up that 4-pack now. Come early, be loud, and wear red as we pack the stadium for homecoming.
ESPN 97.5.